Johnston, brought to you by McLeod Trail Midas. Save some cash and skip the dealer. Bring your vehicle into McLeod Trail Midas, a full-service shop. Check out their Facebook page or schedule an appointment at midas.com.
Well, CJ, probably not a ton of surprise, but John Hines no longer the head coach of the New Jersey Devils after last night's shellacking in Buffalo.
Yeah, I would say that's not a huge surprise. You're right. It's felt like a little bit of a matter of time there in New Jersey. They've been hovering right around the very bottom of the standings all year. John Hines is at that point where he's been there a while. I certainly don't think it's all on him. There's some roster construction issues, obviously, to get to the spot that they're in. But, the Devils are going to go in another direction. We've been talking about, a potential Taylor Hall deal at some point. And, they're going to do it with a fresh voice, or in this case, a voice, and Alan Nezradine, who's been behind their bench with John Hines throughout his tenure. But, try something different here as they look to get a bit more out of that group.
What can you tell us about the interim head coach? It's a new name for many of us that I guess haven't been paying attention to AHL hockey.
Yeah, he played in the NHL a little bit years ago, and it's kind of interesting because he's been with John Hines, I think, for 9 or 10 seasons consecutively, going back to the American Hockey League with Wilkes-Barre. So there's a close connection there. It's not a case of switching a coach and going in a completely different direction. It's someone who's had a lot of experience with John. I'm not sure that he'll be bringing all that different of an outlook, to be honest. But I think that they got to a point where they just felt that they had to do something to try to spark a little bit more from the group. And let's face it, this is becoming a rebuilding situation again, or a rebuilding year for the Devils. I think especially if they start making some of those trades putting someone different in charge, I think sometimes can make that process a little bit easier in terms of having the players respond to the coach.
They're only ahead of the Detroit Red Wings, who have just been miserable after winning 3 of their first 4 games this season. What else is going to happen to this New Jersey roster beyond just a moving out of a Taylor Hall for what we expect to be a really, really large haul?
Well, I think that they'll look to potentially move some of their other veterans. No, it doesn't sound as though they got to that point internally where they feel they have to do that. But, they have some players that have been there that, have a year or two left on their deal. Not all just pending unrestricted free agents. And I could see potentially, depending on the interest of the deadline, that being a route they go down. But, they also feel pretty good about what they have. I mean, drafting Nico Hischier and getting him signed to a pretty good contract, and then Jack Hughes, adding him to what they're doing. You couple that with the potential for, could even be the number one pick, but certainly another high draft pick this year. And they have a pretty good base to work off of. So, while it looks bad in the moment and they're not winning very many games, I do think that there's some hope in general for that roster. And so, it'll be about deciding which veterans you keep around, because, you don't want to go too young. You can't get rid of absolutely everybody, but also balancing that with who can get you more futures and bring in the types of assets you need to turn your team around. And as I say, I think that they're, even though it's been really a miserable season for them, I think that they're a lot closer than it might appear if you just look at the standings to becoming a good team.
Chris Johnson's with us, who joins us Tuesdays and Thursdays, our Sportsnet NHL insider. CJ, do you see, regardless of today's news with John Hines or not, do you see any way Taylor Hall is a member of the Devils beyond the deadline?
I mean, I guess it's possible, but I would put the odds of that to be pretty low. Just because it wouldn't be, I don't think, a proper way to manage your asset. At this point in time, there's been a fair bit of dialogue with the Devils and Taylor Hall's camp. I think there's clarity there on where each side stands, and the fact of the matter is, Darren Ferris, and he's had many clients that fit into this, is not an agent that tends to have his guys sign early. He likes to see them take the time, if they have it, to use their leverage. And, it's not to say that he's absolutely ruled out signing in New Jersey, but, I don't see him as someone that's likely to sign an extension before the trade deadline. And then if you're in the Devils' position, where, you know, clearly this is a year where you're not competing most likely for the playoffs. It certainly doesn't look that way. You know, I think that, you have to then focus on what you can turn Taylor Hall into. And so, you know, at this point in time, I think that that's a real long shot. But we do have to remember, too, we're still, you know, what, the full 2.5 months from the deadline. So it's not to suggest that that trade is imminent for Taylor Hall. But,
right.
You know, I think that they're now getting their minds around the fact that it's going to happen at some point in those 2.5 months.
Is it more likely to happen closer to the deadline, or does a team want to get the jump on it, especially if you're talking about signing him to an extension? Does a team want to get a jump on it before the deadline?
It's possible, but, you know, I think, again, if we're handicapping it, it's probably going to come into January or even February, you know, get closer to that deadline. You know, even if from the Devils' end of things, I mean, what you're trying to do is create a market and, you know, potentially have teams bid against each other. I mean, you know, at this point in time, we know there's lots of teams that in a vacuum, in a bubble, you know, love Taylor Hall, would love the idea about bringing him in to their team. But, you know, I think the acquisition cost is going to get in the way of some of them, you know, really getting that serious about talks. And so, you know, at this time, I really think a lot of what's happening is, you know, you're having GM's phone ratio. They're having discussions about potential fits and what they might be willing to do. But, you know, I'd be surprised if someone ponied up and got really serious right away and blew their socks off and, you know, gave them a deal that they have to take in the moment. I mean, it's certainly always possible. But, I mean, for this sort of trade, I mean, you're probably looking at potentially 2 first-round picks or certainly a very high-end prospect and a first-round pick and maybe even a little bit more beyond that. And so You know, it's a pretty steep price to pay. You know, some of the teams that I think are interested, like the Colorados and the Edmontons, you know, two that jump out to me that have interest, you know, they're teams that are in a good spot in the standings. You know, it's not a move they have to make this minute. And so, you know, I think that they'll wait it out to see where the price lands, and that'll probably depend on how many serious bidders you have as you get closer to February 24th.
If you surf on over to CJ's Twitter page, at Reporter Chris, a couple of his latest, or a couple of the latest retweets, a statement from Commissioner Gary Bettman and Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly, and then a release from the NHL Coaches Association as well. Akeem Alou met with the NHL today. He's made a statement. The NHL's made a statement. Now the Coaches Association has made a statement. What are your observations of today and what this means going forward?
Well, it sounds as though that meeting was pretty productive today. You know, I think that, you know, Akeem Alou certainly seemed happy with the audience he got with Gary Bettman and Bill Daly and you know, other members of the NHL head office there. And, you know, really, I think the next thing we look towards is, you know, what kind of actions might they take? I mean, obviously, the statements include a lot of words. And, you know, I get that, you know, all these organizations want to take a stand against some of the things that have gone on and make it clear that they want to, you know, build more inclusive workplaces and healthier places on the job. But yeah, the next thing I look for is some form of action, you know, from the league, and I think in concert with the Players Association and potentially the NHL Coaches Association. And, you know, the NHL Board of Governors meet next Monday and Tuesday down in Pebble Beach, and you know, I would expect, or I think it's very possible, that out of that big meeting of the owners, that there's some sort of plan launched or initiative taken. You know, it's not clear to me exactly what that'll be at this point in time. But, you know, I think that it's very important after, you know, making the apologies and putting out statements and meeting with someone like Akeem Alou that the league also takes measures to, you know, make the workplace better and to make the environment around the league better. And then I would expect that's kind of the next shoe to drop here after what's happened today.
Does this feel like some new mandates or a policy? Like for instance, I compare it to when different leagues have run into issues public perception-wise with performance-enhancing drugs. You've seen leagues come out and publicize harsh new punishments and new policies for that. Is it something like that that we end up seeing when it comes to change being made?
I would think that would be part of it. And, you know, maybe you have something to do with you know, a league-wide policy on you know, hiring and you know, considering minorities for positions. I mean, I'm not suggesting there'll be a quota or you have to interview someone of color or something like that, like you see in the NFL, for example. But I think that it's, I think it's going to be meaningful. It's my sense of things. And I've heard one idea bandied around about having, you know, players and coaches all sign a code of conduct form. You know, maybe it's in that way in which, you know, it's basically a legal document. If someone acts in a way that's against the code of conduct, you know, actions can be taken. But, you know, I do think that this won't be anything that you view as a token measure, that they're serious about trying to be more aggressive with how they deal with these issues, but also in preventing them from happening in the first place. Not having a culture around the sport where some of what we're hearing, the allegations out there, can be repeated. And you know, this really has been a big, it's hard because we're processing it all in the moment, but this has been a pretty big, you know, week and or 9 days, whatever it's been in the hockey world. There's a lot come out. You know, obviously, but the Bill Peters' resignation and Mark Crawford being taken off the Blackhawks bench while he's investigated, a few other things around the league. But, you know, I think it really is just the start of more changes, because it's pretty clear that some pretty powerful people in the sport recognize that this is a moment that requires action. It's not something that's just going to go away. And you know, I do think the NHL is going to be aggressive here in the next week or so and kind of giving us an idea of what exactly it has in mind to address these issues.
Vancouver Canucks announced that Alec Burrows is going to go to their Ring of Honor. He was particularly despised in this mark during his peak, which happened to coincide with the best years of recent Canuck hockey, with two President's Trophies and a trip to the Stanley Cup Final. He's an incredible story. What sort of intel or background can you give us on the Alec Burrows journey to the NHL?
Well, not too many guys that start in the ECHL end up, you know, getting a Ring of Honor or a number retired. I know it's not quite at the number retirement for him, but, you know, pretty amazing story of perseverance. You know, was reading a bit today about recalling his Game 7 goal against Chicago in 2011. In overtime, you know, perhaps some are calling it the biggest goal in Canucks history. And you know, really was the one guy, kind of unlikely in a sense, just given his skill set and the way he played, that fit the best with the Sedins. You know, they had a number of line mates over the years, but he had pretty good run of success playing with the Twins there. And, you know, I think that's part of his legacy as well. So, you know, you don't usually see guys that are agitators that you know, played the game the way he did, get that kind of recognition. And you know, I think it says a lot about, you know, really how he pulled himself up and became more than just a, you know, a pain in the butt, you know, that he had a fair amount of skill and you know, put up some offensive numbers and scored some big goals for one of the best Canucks teams that organization's ever had to this point. So I think it'll be a cool night. It looked like, you know, he got a fair bit of attention there today with you know, getting that honor for him.
What do we know about the Maple Leafs and their cap situation with Mitch Marner's impending return?
Well, it's finally here. You know, we've talked, especially in Toronto, a lot about the fact that they're going to have no room to maneuver when everyone's healthy. Well, you know, they haven't had a point all season where everyone's been healthy, but they're getting very close now with what looks like, excuse me, Mitch Marner being activated potentially for their game tomorrow against Colorado, which, you know, sort of triggers a series of events that's going to require them to get their roster down to 21 players. So, you know, they put Nick Shore on waivers today. They have a few other players that are either on entry-level deals or already passed through waivers that can be sent down, a group that includes Nick Patan, Martin Marincin, and Pierre Engvall, who's been up, a rookie, has played his first couple of NHL games during the last week or two. And so, you know, they're at that stage now where they're going to get down to the 21 skaters here pretty quick. And then, you know, the next thing that happens is if, you know, illness comes or a couple of small injuries, minor injuries, you know, they're going to be playing some games shorthanded, as we saw Chicago do once this week. I know Calgary did it years ago, kind of famously it was 15 skaters or whatever it was they had back in that era. But, you know, that's the point the Leafs are going to be in, unless they have another major injury to a player who makes a lot of money, so someone they could put on LTI to create room to be carrying sort of a normal size roster. You know, that's not going to be a luxury they have. I think that they'll trade their position with the cap to have a healthy Mitch Marner back in the lineup because, you know, they've certainly missed him here the last 3.5 weeks. But, you know, their cap is going to sort of move even more to the forefront of the story for this team, because I think you're going to see lots of goofy things happen because they literally have so little room now to operate once Mitch Marner's activated tomorrow.
And I guess just a quick follow-up in that same vein, do we have any hard news on next year's cap? I know it was last June when GMs, right before the draft, got the bad news that it wouldn't be going to a spot they'd all planned for, even close to it. And I know the NHL wants to get that number out sooner, or at least try to. Any word on that front?
No hard news yet. That'll come at the Board of Governors actually next week. It's typically where the league gives its first kind of official projection. I will say, in speaking to people, though, that work for teams, that, you know, last year, I believe, at that December meeting, they were quoted somewhere potentially as much as $84 million. Then it was downgraded to $82.5 million, and then at the last minute, it went to $81.5 million. So it was, you know, a full $2.5 million less than what they were expecting. And as a result, I think a lot of them now are approaching this with more caution. So, you know, almost no matter what the league says next week, I think that there'll be some managers not wanting to get caught in the situation they found themselves in last year, and will be projecting for basically next to no increase potentially. And I think some of that is tied up with negotiations with the NHLPA. I know we haven't really talked about that a lot lately, but I know at some point those sides were discussing fixing the cap at a certain number as part of a plan to perhaps reduce the escrow payments for players and to wait for the US TV money to come in, which could be a boon for the league. So, you know, all that's still kind of up in the air. There hasn't been serious progress, at least that I've heard, with the CBA talks. But you know, we'll get our first window into that a week from now, and you know, it probably won't be worth too much for all the GMs that thought at this time last year it was going to be an $84 million cap, and it ended up, you know, a second or third line player south of that by the time we got to the end of the season.
Did you ever get a good explanation on why that cap came in low? Was it just smaller markets in the Final Four? You know, Boston, St. Louis, Carolina and San Jose are not Chicago, New York, Montreal, Toronto.
Yeah, it was a tough playoffs that way. You know, it's such a strange thing. Obviously, not every you have 31 teams and 32 teams, but not all those markets sell well. And I think that was part of what they dealt with. You know, St. Louis is a good hockey market traditionally, but doesn't move the needle nationally as much as some would like. And you know, I don't know where all the miscalculations came in, but I do think that was a pretty big factor, because, you know, the playoffs is a time when the league isn't paying the players, and that's a time when a lot of teams make serious bucks, and the numbers were a little less than what they were hoping for.
CJ, appreciate it. We'll chat again later this week. Thank you.
Thanks, CJ.
All right, I'm in Calgary next week, boys. Get ready. Prepare the authorities.
Well, listen, I've looked at the schedule. Don't be pulling this fast one on me. You're going to be in Vancouver the night before. You're going to be writing until about 1 a.m. following the Flames game and Leafs game on the 12th, and then you'll be gonzo. So stop pretending you're going to have a night out with us, or at least if you're going to do it, call it now.
Well, I don't know if I'm going to have a night out with you, but what I will say is I'm going to the Board of Governors meeting Monday, Tuesday, so I'm missing the Vancouver game, and then I'm flying to Calgary because I got three good buddies that live there, and
yeah,
I'm
you
not
do.
Actually working, so...
So five good buddies.
For those. So I'm five good buddies, exactly. So I'm coming in just for a social visit, and of course we'll make time for our weekly chats. Maybe we can do one in person while I'm there.
Can't wait. Thanks, man.
All right, boys.
Chris Johnston, brought to you by McLeod Trail Midas. Save some cash and skip the dealer. Bring your vehicle into McLeod Trail Midas, a full-service shop. Check out their Facebook page or schedule an appointment at Midas.com.